All right. It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, all the way from Three Rivers, California, celebrating 15 months of sobriety. That's correct. Let's give it up for Christina.
All righty. I'm Christina, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. Oh, I'm so nervous to be here, but I'm so excited. I remember coming to the Ice House maybe 5 years ago, and I was coming to support my friend Elle when she came up here and spoke. And I remember thinking, there's no way I would ever do that. It takes too much courage. I don't know how she did it. And I remember her preparing the day she started and the day she started preparing for it. And I remember thinking, like, wow, she has it together. She's doing it. She's doing big things. So coming here and speaking was totally out of my wheelhouse. Now, I didn't get sober that time when I watched Elle do her, share her experience, strength, and hope up here. But this time I did. And so I'm so nervous. I'm going to get super red. I might cry. I don't know. I just had a baby 8 weeks ago. So I'm still kind of like nutty, you know, like trying to not be as nutty. But it's an AA baby. I would not have this, my little boy, if it wasn't for AA and if it wasn't for God and AA connecting me with the higher power that I was lacking for so, so long. Okay, so what it was like. I'm 30. It's a good age, right? 30 is a great age. I'll start with my alcoholism and then move into everything else. I started drinking before I knew I was drinking. My story might get a little intense, but it might not. I don't know how far I'm going to go. I had a family member that would give me alcohol at a really, really young age, 5, 6, 7 years old. And it was an older male family member, and he would give me alcohol. I didn't know, because I was so young at the time, that it was alcohol. I knew it made me feel awesome. I knew I loved it. I knew I loved drinking it. I looked forward to the times that I was going to be around him, that I was able to drink it. So that was my first introduction to alcohol. Now, that turned into my whole relationship with alcohol. Like he said, I'm from Three Rivers. I was born and raised there. And from the day I decided to make the decision I wanted to drink on my own, once I got through the childhood trauma that the person put me through, really early on, I said, drinking's my thing. I always felt like I didn't fit in. I was athletic. I had a lot of things going for me. And even with everything going good for me, I never felt like I fit in at all. Even with, as an adult, in every situation, I don't fit in. I was a high school teacher at Delano High School, and I was 22, and I just made it. And this is, there's a lot of stuff that happened in between there, but I remember just not fitting in, not thinking I was good enough. Like, I'm not good enough to be a teacher. I'm not good enough to do all these things. And that was a whirlwind for me my whole life. In high school, typical kid, drank a lot, got good grades, did the whole thing. You can drink on the weekends, you know, a typical kid. Now, what I say is typical is in Three Rivers, we would take a huge thing of vodka, like I don't even know, the biggest thing, pour it in a big cup, and then maybe add ice. And that's what we would drive around with. We were rolling with alcohol in our cars very young. A lot of our parents let us drive young because we're up in the mountains. So we were drinking and driving at a very early age. And what I'm going to go with that is drinking, driving young. I didn't believe in God until a year and a half ago or 14 months ago. I didn't have any connection with God. And the things we would do, we lost a lot of friends. We had cars flip over on friends. We had a lot of things happen, and luckily I was never behind the wheel when the bad stuff happened. But a lot of bad things happened, and so I left for college at 18 years old. I went to Chico State University by choice, definitely by choice. I knew I could go have fun there. I knew it would be a good time, so I did that. Prior to leaving for Chico State, I got my first DUI. I was a senior in high school. And it was just a regular DUI story. I was drinking and driving here in Visalia. Now, you don't get DUIs in Three Rivers. You only get DUIs in Visalia. I learned that pretty early on because I would have a lot more if That wasn't the case, but I got a DUI in high school. I was already set to go to college, so I was really scared. It scared the shit out of me because I thought the college was going to not accept me anymore because, I don't know, I thought that was a thing. Like, if you get in trouble by the law, the college will know, which that doesn't happen until you get into, like, the dorm rooms. But so I was really scared. I told my parents, you know, young kid, I was done. Like, I don't want to ruin my life over this. And that was DUI number one. Now, I'm 30 and have four DUIs. So what I said at 18 didn't happen. I got involved with AA because they court order you AA. I hated the meetings. I thought everybody was super old. I think I thought 30 was old at that time. So I just didn't like the meetings. I didn't like anything about it. I hated God. I was scared. I hated myself. Mainly, I've hated myself. My whole life, I've hated myself because I had no connection with God, zero connection with God or a higher power. I can't even believe I'm up here speaking about God. It's so different of me just a year and a half ago. And that's all AA. So I'm, you know, a freshman and I do college. College is pretty normal. I drink a lot. I go to school. I go to work. Repetitive cycle. For 4 years. I don't even know, like, I might have had, like, two days of non-drinking during that time, but it's just 4 years of being drunk. So I did that, didn't get in trouble, you know, definitely didn't think I was an alcoholic, had every one of my family members, all my ex-friends, I was quickly losing friends in college, I would make a friend, and then they would see what a mess I was, and not want to hang out with me. And then I would, in my head, I would say, oh, they're not hanging out with me because it's my decision. It's me. I'm making these decisions to push these people out of my life when that totally wasn't the case. I was pushing everybody out because of me not having a connection with God and drinking. So 22 years old, I decided to move back down here. I apply for a teaching job, and I get it. And I was so excited. I was with a guy. We were about to get married. It was perfect. I was doing everything perfect. Now, that's right when everything's going good in my life is when I love to drink vodka. You know, everything's perfect. Let me go get drunk just to make sure I can, like, feel how perfect it is. Because the only way I can feel how perfect it is if I'm drunk. So I pretty much had 2 years of teaching, almost 2 years of teaching, head volleyball coach, head swim coach. During that time, I got another DUI. I got into a fight with my soon-to-be significant other. I got arrested for domestic violence. Getting arrested for domestic violence and working with kids is like a no-no, a huge no-no. And my degree is early childhood education. That's my degree. So right then and there, I just kind of gave up. I knew I wasn't going to be, I didn't tell my principal. I knew it was going to take a few months. I didn't tell my union. And then I told my principal I was just going to quit. I ran away from it. And I was like, I quit. I need to go work on me. My principal and my athletic director and everybody was really understanding. And I was just a mess. I imagine they knew I was a mess. I still have to make some amends to those people, and so I know that when I do end up seeing them, then I'm going to get to hear a little bit more about what a mess I was at that time. I just pretty much went on a whirlwind. I got a waitressing job, because waitressing, you know, you can do what you want to do when you waitress. You can get drunk. You can do whatever you want to do. So I spent a few years just getting really drunk. I picked up another DUI. Now this DUI was number three. Judge Shirk is not a nice lady. She is terrifying. She's mean. She doesn't like. She sees through your bullshit. Okay, she sees through my bullshit. So prison was on. I was on my way to prison, and then she said, "Okay, we're gonna give you. I don't know." She said some 180 days. This, and this, and I did it. And at that time, I told my family, I told my friends, I told myself, I promised myself that I'm not gonna do this again. I'm not gonna do this again to myself now. So that's DUI number three. During that time, too, I picked up another domestic violence. Like, I'm not the aggressive one in relationships, though. But, yeah, I am. I'm fucking crazy. And so I didn't, like, at that time, too, I didn't realize it's me until I did my fourth step, probably, is when I realized, when I had to, like, write down my part in it, because I have parts. I didn't have parts before. I never had parts. I didn't have any part in anything until a year and a half ago. It was them. I'm the victim. Because I was victimized at such a young age, I fell into it. Being a victim is easy, super easy. Being a girl victim, even easier. Because guys will eat that up, and it makes life easy, right? But it makes life shitty as heck, too. So, back to the victimality. I thought, okay, if I get this person in trouble who messed up my childhood, then I'll be free, then I'll be okay, then I won't be an alcoholic. So I went to Visalia Police Department and explained my childhood to this detective. And I hate cops. I'm not a cop caller. I hate cops. They just rub me wrong. And so I literally, like, every time I get arrested. I went to this detective. I went to this detective, and I had to tell him what happened in my childhood, and I had to tell him details. Now, I had already gone to counseling for this. So I, you know, braced it, but I had to tell him exact details, because when you're getting somebody in trouble for molestation and rape, you have to have details. And so I had to sit there with this fat, bald-headed detective. He had me call the person who did it to me and talk on the phone with this person, whom I hadn't spoken to since I was a child, and talk to this person about what he had done to me, because that was how he was going to build his case against this person. So I did that, and I had to tell the detective all these details and all these things that I hadn't even thought about. Because when you're blacked out drunk at 7 years old, it's still in your mind, but it's easy to just totally put back. Like, it's stuff. And as I started to come out with everything to this detective, all these weird ass shit came up that I didn't even know I remembered. So I did this whole process. My family member ended up getting 10 years in prison, which was actually, I thought, was going to be my closing of the door, was going to be, okay, I'm not a victim anymore. I made him take responsibility. I was 26 years old, and he did this one until I was 14. So it was a big gap of time where he was out and about. And so then I got the feeling of guilt of, well, should I have put him away because he's part of my family, he has children, this, that, and the other. So I went into an even deeper, darker place. At this time, I had had my first son, and sadly, he was born into my addiction. I didn't drink when I was pregnant, but after I was done having my son, I would pump and dump. I breastfed, but I would, like, schedule my breastfeeding around when I could drink. And looking back on that, it's crazy. Like, I have my son now. I have two sons. My son now, who's 8 weeks, and I just can't, like, the chaos around. It's already hard just taking care of a kid and planning how to get drunk so that you can. It was just chaotic, super chaotic. And I was chaos. Until a year ago, my life was very unmanageable. I can get sober. Getting sober is super easy. I can stay sober for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, but I can't stay sober, because the second I start feeling good, everything falls apart. And everything's cliche in here, like when it gets worse, never better. And that's how it is with me. And I, like people say in here, I think Brett says it, when you touch a stove and you keep touching it, it'll keep burning you. Those sort of things are super cliche, but they're real. So I had my family member put away. I thought everything's going to be okay. I'm good. I went into another little black hole of just taking care of my son, taking care of my house, and drinking. I live in Three Rivers, like I said, so there's always somebody at the river drinking. There's always somewhere to go with moms and their kids. There's a lot of my mom friends were not alcoholics, but I mean, not to my level, but they liked to drink, and so I didn't think it was bad. So one day I decided to drive down here to Visalia. I didn't decide. My son was going with his father. It was a Friday. And I drove down here and I hit a curb in my Prius hard. And I, again, was cops there, obviously, rather quickly. But this time the ante was up. My son was in the car. So, and he was 2 years old at the time. He's four now. And my son was in the car. He didn't know I had crashed. I knew I had crashed. I knew I was going to go to jail. And then right then and there, I was like, okay, I'm never going to drink again. It's never going to happen. I'm never going to drink again. I'm in the back of this police car for the umpteenth million time. And it's not going to happen again. And I want to say that, like, I got out of jail. I bailed immediately. I want to say I got out of jail and just stayed sober, but that's when it got worse. I was scared. I was I didn't know what was going to happen, so then I got dry, came back to AA for the fourth time probably, and then I met my sponsor who texted me. She doesn't know where this meeting's at, so I'm not writing her back because she makes me nervous. So she's not here right now, but I went to a bridge before I got sentenced. I went to a bridge meeting, and I went there with my son's father, my youngest son's father, and he saw Dylan, and I saw Dylan. He's like, that is like you, just older. And I was like, don't tell her that. But so I met my sponsor, and life, well, I didn't really know what I was getting in for or getting into. She told me, come to a Thursday night meeting. I'll meet you there, and that's it. And I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to do this. That my last DUI where my son was in the car, I got lucky. I did 30 days, and then I got offered a program, which it's kind of similar to drug court, but it's called DUI court. If you've had a lot of DUIs or a felony DUI, they offer you DUI court, which it's the same as drug court. You call a number daily. You test. You go to four AA meetings a week, and I don't know, a couple other things. But I knew that I was going to have to come to AA for a year straight for a week. And I was like, okay, do I want to waste my time coming to these four? I love AA, and I've loved it even when I didn't get sober. I always thought it was a good organization. I just couldn't figure it out. So I said, do I want to do this, or do I want to just have a year of not participating, coming here, just kind of staring at the wall, making a couple friends, but not being true to myself? And I made the decision when I saw Dylan that day that I was ready to do this. So I met her at our home group, and then it was not what I expected. They started off by saying the set-aside prayer, which I had never even heard the set-aside prayer. I don't know how I've had to hear it for how many meetings I've gone to. I guess I never listened, or it never sunk in. I wasn't willing to allow God to help me. But then I heard the set-aside prayer. I'm going to read it because I know majority of the people have obviously heard it, but there might be the one person who hasn't. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease, the 12 steps, and especially you, so I may have an open mind and a new experience of all these things. Please let me see the truth. Like, that will make me cry sometimes now when I read that, because I had such a profound, when I sat there and listened to that in my home group, I looked inside my soul and I said, what I've been doing isn't working. At that time I had one child. I had thrown away my life. I had made these decisions to not allow God in my life because I'm too smart and I'm just doing so well without him. I made all these decisions. And once I read this, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, that was hard because I've lied to myself for so long. I lied to myself since I was a kid. I've lied so much to myself that you believe it, or for me, I believe it. So my reality isn't reality. And so I had to, in the last year and a half, I've had to really come to my truth. So I had to be truthful with myself and then my disease. I never wanted to have to call myself an alcoholic. I never wanted to think I had a problem because I was able to do things while I drank. I was able to get a degree. I was able to become a teacher. I was able to do things that my friends who weren't alcoholics weren't doing. So I never thought that I could have a disease. Now, in early stages of sobriety, I would tell my significant other I have a disease, and he would just throw me in the dirt over it. So there's a balance with that one. The 12 steps. Now, with the 12 steps, I started them, and it took me a long time. The steps have taken me a very long time, which I've done the steps once before, and it was real quick, real easy, and it wasn't hard. When I've done the steps this time through with my sponsor, it's changed everything for me. The first step was the hardest for me, which I've always can say I'm an alcoholic, but it wasn't. My sponsor really made me realize that it wasn't the amount of DUIs or my two DV charges or going to jail or anything. That doesn't make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is that when I'm not drinking and when I'm in a sober state, I'm still obsessing about it. I still think that one day, now that I haven't drank for 15 months, I'm good. I just had a baby. My mind's super good. My spirituality level's out of the roof. I can go drink. That's what my mind tells me. And the only reason that I haven't gone back out and drank is because I finally decided, well, I didn't decide, God helped, or God decided for me that this is what I'm doing now. And it's not even a thought process in my head. I remember the first month or two working with Dylan, I still thought, I'm going to drink again. I'm going to drink again. Always. I left her house thinking, I'm going to drink again. And over time, through fixing my spirituality and realizing that I was in a sober state, I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. In a sober state, I suck. In a sober state, I can't take care of myself. I act like I can. Like, in a sober state, I'm not good. And so taking the alcohol away from me was just like the easy part almost. The doing the work with my sponsor and coming down, like I can make an excuse really easy that I live 45 minutes away. And now that I have a newborn, it's like so many excuses are so easy for me. But the second I actually go and do the work is when the real things start happening. My spiritual malady, I'll read this part of the book. Trouble with personal relations. Couldn't control our emotional nature. We were prey of misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness, full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. When I read that, it resonated with me. I know that's the common one that resonates with people, but that's me. It's putting the smile on my face can only last so long, and trying to build real relationships wasn't working for me. With step one, I had to admit I was powerless and that my life wasn't manageable and that DUIs don't make me an alcoholic. And then I had to realize that I have craving. And that when my craving takes over, I have an allergic reaction to alcohol. I had never heard of craving and obsession. I had never heard of spirituality. I probably had heard maybe them in the meetings, but I never actually took them into consideration of how they obtained in me. Now, when I drink, when I have my first drink, I could be in a social situation, but I'm already thinking about how I'm going to drink for the whole night. So I'll start with my one drink, and how is this going to last me from whatever time I start drinking, normally earlier for me than later, and how is it going to last me until I pass out, not fall asleep? And so that's me every time I drink, and it's sick, and it doesn't, like explaining it, it doesn't sound fun. But then when you're in it, it's fun, and that's what you feel like. what I've done so far, like I said, I did the steps, and then now is the real, what I always dreaded was working with other people. It's hard to take, well, I give props to my sponsor. Since I live in Three Rivers, my timing is a little off. She'll take me whenever I want for an hour each week. And she did that religiously for this last year. And because she's done that religiously, she says it's helped her. But she's really made it. I guess, Dylan, I'm talking about you. I just got into it. She opened up the spirituality for me and made it so that I'm able to find a higher power or God. It's like a teacher walking in. I get nervous. This lady has helped me so much. It's amazing. I'll go back to the restless, irritable, and discontent. So in my sober state, I'm a bitch. I'm crazy. I look for drama. I crave drama. Not take alcohol away from me. I will create drama so that I have something to feed off of. When I went through steps 2 and 3, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. That was a hard, both of those steps were hard for me because I was so turned off by the idea of God, and I was so hated God, didn't believe in him. Not that I was raised in any sort of way against him. I know Catholicism and stuff, like I hear a lot about that, but it wasn't that. It was just that God didn't exist to me. And by doing the work line by line, I slowly got a connection with him. When I started to pray, I slowly got more of a connection. As I continued to go through the work, my connection grew and grew. And now it's weird, like I'll be doing something throughout my day and I turn to God. It's like that would never happen. God's stupid, right? I turn to God and I think, okay, what I'm doing isn't working. A year, 15 months ago, if I would have had to do this, I would have spent the whole day having anxiety about it, stressing about it. Can it be 8 o'clock yet? Which, trust me, I'll end early. But I would be stressing about it. And all I did today was pray. I told my sponsor I was going to come do this. And other than that, I prayed and took care of my kids. I knew that everything was going to be okay. And I normally get beet red, and this is like a low red tone for me. So made a searching and fearless moral inventory. I always heard that the fourth step sucked and was super hard. But two and three I thought were so hard that I was ready for four. I was so ready for four. I was ready to say what other people had done to me, because being in that victim state is like I said, comfortable. Being a victim is so comfortable. People feel bad for you. You're so, it's pitiful, you know? So I was ready for that. And I wrote down, you know, everything. And then when I went to work with my sponsor, she said, now you realize that, I don't know how exactly it was worded, but it came to my attention that I'm doing all of these things to all of these people that all these people and things did to me, but I'm doing them way worse. I'm doing them 100 times worse. Even the person who in my childhood messed up my childhood, I'm doing what he does, you know, not the same exact thing, but I'm doing the same antics he does to other people, to my children, to other people around me. And that was a big awakening for me. I don't know if that, I guess, because people say you have your spiritual awakening. I don't know if that was my spiritual awakening or what, but I just realized, well, like, damn, I am an asshole. I suck. I'm not good at I'm not good at life. And then once I did step four, and then step five was easy because I did so much in step four. It took me, I think, 2 months maybe. It took a while. It took like, I think, 6 times of going to my sponsor's house to get through it. And every time I would leave, I would, going to my sponsors, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this. And then leaving my sponsors, it was like a high. It was like a feeling of like, wow, I just did that. I can't, like, it was every time, and each time it got better and better. So every time I worked with my sponsor, I would dread it and then have the best feeling afterwards. And that can only be God, because who wants to go like sit and talk about yourself reading a book with like a lady who's kind of awesome? So I never wanted to do it, but leaving, I always changed everything for me. And then six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. That's easy. I want God to take them away. Now, should God take away some of my bad defects? Maybe they'll help people. Maybe, you know, maybe my bitchiness is good. We'll see what God says, but we'll let God decide that. I can't decide that. That's made my life, I think that's been the most profound thing, is giving it to God. That's such a lame saying, giving it to God, but letting God control my life has changed everything. The one thing I wished for, I got this within this last year of sobriety. Everything. The promises are so real, but the only way that I've gotten the promises was because I worked with the sponsor. I've been sober before for this amount of time, and it was not fun. It was, you know, I was a mess. I was pissing a lot of people off. And then these last 15 months of being sober, with realizing that there's a solution, that I'm not the solution, that sadly my sponsor isn't the solution, that my sons aren't the solution. That's the hardest one, is that I can't stay sober for my sons. I have two beautiful kids, and they're just amazing. And I look at them, and I remember with my first son, I would take shots and just look at him and think like, oh my God, you're so beautiful, as I'm taking shots. And it's just, nothing can keep me sober if I don't have this connection with God. I could go into a lot about my sons. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. That was easy too. I know I have a lot of shortcomings, and doing the fourth step and seeing the role I played in everything made it even more obvious. And then each day when I go to bed, I think about what role I played. Have I gossiped about people? Have I, just petty things that aren't good for your spirituality. And I really have to sit there at the end of the day. I'll tell you guys right now, I'm on my ninth step. I actually haven't I'm still working on my ninth step. So I know that I think it's the 10th step where you do this every day. I'm already doing that. But I haven't gone through that part yet. Now, So that was easy. And then made a list of people Reef Farms and direct amends. The ninth step for me so far has been easy because I haven't done that many amends. I did all my amends really early in sobriety. I got sober and I said sorry to everybody. And I went to my sponsor's house and told her I did that. And she said, well, that's cool. You're going to have to do it again in the ninth step. So I have all these great apologies I've already said to people. And now I have to rewrite them and make them real apologies, I guess. I don't know. So I can't talk more highly about how if you can find somebody like I found to help guide me or to help guide you to finding a higher power, it's the biggest blessing ever. I feel like I owe this organization my life, $1 million, like everything, because there's no way I would have met the person I met to help take me through this work. It's just amazing. And then, like I said, I had never heard about craving or obsession. And now when I go throughout my day and I think or I have a thought about it, I say what craving is. I say what obsession is. I remind myself. I also, too, now it's crazy to have girls come up to me and ask me to help them. It's like a different world for me. I can't even... By just going to my sponsor's house an hour a week, doing all the work in the week in between, there's always a little bit of work or a lot of work, doing all that work and staying committed to actually doing the process has completely changed my life. And it was easy. It was like, just do it. I always thought, too, when I first got into AA, when I was 18, that the sponsor is like a teacher. Like, they'll make you do it. They'll call you. They'll, like, you know, like, oh, did you do this work today? Like, I want to check it. Like, it's not on, it wasn't, I always put it on my sponsor when I didn't get sober. It's my sponsor's fault I didn't get sober. But my sponsor, all she was doing was trying to take me through the steps. All my other sponsors have been, they try to take me through the steps. Now, I got my first letdown. I got a sponsee. I called her, and she didn't call me back. And I was thinking about all the times that I did that to people, some people in the room. So I would get a sponsor and just not follow through, and that's all on me. I would think, oh, my sponsor didn't call me, or she didn't text me back quick enough, or, you know, because I text back so quick. but I feel like this program is so easy now that I just did it. And this is like the longest I've been away from my baby, so this is kind of like I get to hang out and just chill while he's out in the car. I haven't had that feeling either. Now that I'm going on to continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it, that's what I was saying that I do every night, even though I haven't, my sponsor hasn't told me exactly what to do with that. I think I know. And so throughout the day, if I screw up or if I'm rude or mean or whatever I do, I look at it in the nighttime. Before, it would be, let me get drunk, let me throw it away, let me not deal with it. But AA has given me, seriously, life. I don't think I've probably talked long enough, but no, I'm good. 10 minutes, that's what I wanted to hit with 7:50. The longest I've ever spoke at a meeting was like 3 minutes. So this is so out of my wheelhouse. I've never spoken this long at a meeting. I've never, even when I share at my home group or different meetings, it's like a short 2 minutes. So this is all big for me, and this is really hard to do. I have a lot more experience, and then the strength and hope now is coming, and it's coming fast because of God and because I was able to get connected with of somebody I liked and somebody who really helped me and somebody who really, it's just crazy. I don't know even how to explain it. If I could do it, though, anybody can, because I suck, and like everybody, like you guys, everybody can do it in here. I remember being in a recovery home, because I know there's a couple of recovery homes here, and I remember thinking like how fun the recovery home was, and I wish I would have just paid attention or gotten a connection earlier on, but I am where I am, and God brought me here, and I'm really happy, and I thank you guys so much for letting me share.